Air January 19th.
And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And I'm Arlene Englehart. And you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View. We're so glad you're with us this morning, and we hope you'll stay with us for the whole hour, and that you'll just keep your dial tuned to WMNF all day long.
Well, I'm really excited about our show, but I am hoping you just listened to Amy Goodman's show, and I thought some of the information that they were bringing out about the problems with the medical system, and particularly failing Black women. Well, actually, in my opinion, our medical system has been broken for so long, and I think it's the reason I have fought for single payer or Medicare for all just practically my whole life. Actually, way back when I was in medical school, I realized there was something really wrong. And, you know, when I was hearing that, they don't understand women. I mean, practically all tests are done essentially with a white male who weighs about 180 pounds. And so no pregnant women are even a possibility. And yes, the differences. And with Serena Williams, and I don't know if you've read the story that she's just put out about the terrible problem she had. Well, actually, I was very worried about Serena during that pregnancy because I knew she had a tendency to hematomas. You know, she had two of them in her abdomen and blood clots. And this is a problem for a lot of African American and other women, too. And I mean, of course, they don't know why. There are so many things they don't know why. And yes, the death rate, not only of African American women giving birth, but the death rate of African American babies in the first year is absolutely deplorable. And you were talking about asthma. The majority of African Americans in this country live within a mile of some type of toxic waste one way or the other. And the incidence of asthma is alarming. And so, but back to the medical system on a whole. And I think, you know, it was okay for a long time, maybe till about the 70s. But really then, you know, when it started to go corporate. And so instead of being concerned about what is causing disease, what is the problem, and to understand that you have to have some sense of how the body works. And so if you're only focusing on a cure, and that cure particularly is coming out of a pharmacological or a surgical base, then you are at best just trying to hit off some symptoms. And there has to be a commitment to actually understanding the miracle we all have of the human body and life. And instead, no, it's compartmentalized. They go for the cure. They go for relief of symptoms. And it's no wonder that African American women, Hispanic white women, were not the only ones not being well served, but it was heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking to think about an Erica Garner and what happened to her father and how much it affected her life. What's affecting all of our lives, the stress everybody is under right now. And the more problems you have, particularly in a social culture milieu, it just adds to it. And so I hope you were listening to Amy Goodman. Really, just listen to WMNF. You're not going to get fake news. You're going to get the real thing. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Arlene.
That's nothing to be sorry about. But on that same note, I'd like to mention that I am on the planning committee, so it's somewhat personal.
Right.
But we will be having a Florida Healthcare Summit. It will be down in West Palm Beach on February 16th and 17th, but the goal is to work on grassroots efforts to provide health care for everyone in Florida. And there will be, there's an amazing array of speakers, including Tony Van Pelt as one of the keynote speakers, and also
Margaret Flowers,
but Bernie's great and good assistant.
Tina. I always want to call her Tina Turner.
Yeah.
No, is it Tina? I can't hear her name right now. We ran her a show. O'Neill? No. Anyway,
she'll be one of the keynote speakers. It's going to be a great conference with lots of tracks and some tracks about women's health. So if you're interested in attending, you can go to Florida Healthcare Summit on the web and check out the program and the possibilities.
And there's an emphasis on women's health. And I believe, actually, the one who's sponsoring it, he came to that realization with his daughter and the problem she was having with medical care. And he was so alarmed, you know, even though she had insurance, what was available. And so this is what we need, people, grassroots efforts. If you're unhappy, we can change things. We must change things. Because if we don't, it is very profitable for those who are perfectly happy with the way things are. So,
right.
Anyway.
And support for WMNF comes from our members and Live Nation, presenting the Sunshine Music Festival at Vinoy Park in St. Petersburg on Saturday, January 13th. Starring Tedeschi Trucks Band, Medeski Martin and Wood, Galactic, and many more. A full day of music, food, fun, and more. Get info at Ticketmaster.com.
And I am excited about this show today. I'm hoping that some of you at least watched the Golden Globes. It was really pretty inspiring, the number of women that were really, you know, dressed in black, et cetera, calling attention to the kind of sexual harassment, et cetera, that's not only happening to starlets, but through our society. And I thought Oprah Winfrey's speech was really very powerful and very empowering. And then I was able to catch up with Bryce Covert yesterday, and she is going to be giving us a little more information about Time's Up. But then also we're going to be talking to Michelle Allen, and we're going to be talking about, yes, the importance of water, clean, potable water here in this state, and not only the anti-fracking, but what is this about offshore oil drilling? And so I was going to do a little musical interlude, but instead I think we will just get right into this. And so let's start... because I was really very moved by Oprah Winfrey's Golden Globe speech.
I was a little girl sitting on the linoleum floor of my mother's house in Milwaukee, watching Anne Bancroft present the Oscar for Best Actor at the 36th Academy Awards. She opened the envelope and said five words that literally made history. The winner is Sidney Poitier. Up to the stage came the most elegant man I had ever seen. I remember his tie was white, and of course his skin was black, and I'd never seen a black man being celebrated like that. And I have tried many, many, many times to explain what a moment like that means to a little girl, a kid watching from the cheap seats as my mom came through the door, bone tired from cleaning other people's houses. But all I can do is quote and say that the explanation in Sidney's performance in Lilies of the Field, amen, 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 amen. In 1982, Sidney received the Cecil B. DeMille Award right here at the Golden Globes, and it is not lost on me that at this moment, there are some little girls watching as I become the first black woman to be given the same award. It is an honor. It is an honor. And it is a privilege to share the evening with all of them, and also with the incredible men and women who've inspired me, who've challenged me, who've sustained me and made my journey to this stage possible. Dennis Swanson, who took a chance on me for AM Chicago. Quincy Jones, who saw me on that show and said to Steven Spielberg, yes, she is Sophia in The Color Purple. Gail, who's been the definition of what a friend is, and Stedman, who's been my rock, just a few to name. I'd like to thank the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, because we all know that the press is under siege these days. But we also know that it is the insatiable dedication to uncovering the absolute truth that keeps us from turning a blind eye to corruption and to injustice. To tyrants and victims and secrets and lies. I want to say that I value the press more than ever before, as we try to navigate these complicated times, which brings me to this. What I know for sure is that speaking your truth is the most powerful. powerful tool we all have. And I'm especially proud and inspired by all the women who have felt strong enough and empowered enough to speak up and share their personal stories. Each of us in this room are celebrated because of the stories that we tell. And this year, we became the story. But it's not just a story affecting the entertainment industry. It's one that transcends any culture, geography, race, religion, politics, or workplace. So I want tonight to express gratitude to all the women who have endured years of abuse and assault because they, like my mother, had children to feed and bills to pay and dreams to pursue. They're the women whose names we'll never know. They are domestic workers and farm workers. They are working in factories, and they work in restaurants, and they're in academia and engineering and medicine and science. They're part of the world of tech and politics and business. There are athletes in the Olympics, and there are soldiers in the military. And there's someone else, Reese Taylor. A name I know, and I think you should know too. In 1944, Reese Taylor was a young wife and a mother. She was just walking home from a church service. She'd attended in Abbeville, Alabama, when she was abducted by six armed white men, raped and left blindfolded by the side of the road, coming home from church. They threatened to kill her if she ever told anyone. But her story was reported to the NAACP, where a young worker by the name of Rosa Parks became the lead investigator on her case. And together, they sought justice. But justice wasn't an option in the era of Jim Crow. The men who tried to destroy her were never persecuted. Reese Taylor died 10 days ago, just shy of her 98th birthday. She lived, as we all have lived, too many years in a culture broken by brutally powerful men. For too long, women have not been heard or believed if they dared to speak their truth to the power of those men. But their time is up. The time is up. The time is up. And I just hope that Reese Taylor died knowing that her truth, like the truth of so many other women who were tormented in those years, and even now, tormented, goes marching on. It was somewhere in Rosa Parks' heart almost 11 years later when she made the decision to stay seated on that bus in Montgomery. And it's here with every woman who chooses to say, me too. And every man who chooses to listen. In my career, what I've always tried my best to do, whether on television or through film, is to say something about how men and women really behave, to say how we experience shame, how we love and how we rage, how we fail, how we retreat, persevere, and how we overcome. And I've interviewed and portrayed people who've withstood some of the ugliest things life can throw at you. But the one quality all of them seem to share is an ability to maintain hope for a brighter morning, even during our darkest nights. So I want all the girls watching here and now to know that a new day is on the horizon. And when that new day finally dawns, it will be because of a lot of magnificent women many of whom are right here in this room tonight, and some pretty phenomenal men fighting hard to make sure that they become the leaders who take us to the time when nobody ever has to say, me too, again. Thank you.
Oh, that's powerful stuff. There's no wonder there's all kinds of talk whether Oprah might consider running to be president. Anyway, very powerful stuff, and indeed, time's up. It really is. I think that it's, you know, that there's this, it's so fascinating to me because particularly so many things are coming together now, you know, whether it's sexual harassment, whether it's in the workplace, the schools, the military, et cetera. And this is an age problem, age old problem. And we realize to actually fight that and to change that, that we have to go back to the roots and we have to go back to the inequality basically for women. And frankly, it starts with the autonomy of their body. They have to have autonomy of their body. They have to be respected for the full humanness that they are. And people are going to have to realize that God or whoever chose women to have babies and to have life. And so that is their moral, that is their physical ability, and they can do it. They have done it for thousands of years. But also we realize that one of the reasons sexual harassment is such a problem in the workplace is because of the income inequality. And so many women are at a disadvantage, particularly if they're in lower paying jobs, because that paycheck is keeping them from being homeless or or their kids for having food on the table. And so then you also then put in other factors, not only the income, but the autonomy of the body. And so to actually change and to improve women's lives and make this people challenging their autonomy, that challenging their dignity to be something that is unthinkable, we have to change basically society, and we have to question who is a government? What are they serving? Who are we as a people? How can we have treated over 50% of our population like this for so many years and continue it? What are we? And to address those questions will not only improve the lives of women, but more importantly, it'll improve the lives of all the people in this country. And I think at a desperate time of need, it will actually improve this country. It is the peace it has been missing. And so I actually am very, very hopeful for the future. But I think it's going to take everything we've got. And I really think we have it. And, you know, so many times you're asked to give everything you have, so to speak, in a military conflict. Well, this is a war, if you will, but it's not with guns. It's not with bullets. It's with human spirit and human morality. And I really feel that this is actually really going to bring this country into a much fuller realization of its democracy, its freedom, justice, equality for all. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox. I was able to talk to Bryce Colbert yesterday, and she's going to give us a little background on Time's Up in case you don't know too much about it. So let's give a listen, Bryce Colbert. I am so happy to welcome to the show Bryce Colbert, and she's an independent journalist. I commonly catch her writing in Rewire, that excellent, excellent website. But you can also pick her up. She's op-ed writer for New York Times, New Republic. And in 2016, she won the Exceptional Merit and Media Award from the National Women's Political Caucus. So, Bryce Colbert, welcome so much to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, I thought you wrote an excellent article. I caught it on Rewire, on actually telling us a little bit about Time's Up, what it's about, et cetera. And after the Golden Globes and Oprah Winfrey's stirring speech, I think a lot of people want to know a little bit more about Time's Up.
Yeah, if you were watching the Golden Globes, as I was, you would have heard that phrase a lot, and you might have come away thinking it's just some sort of new slogan or PR thing going on in Hollywood. And, you know, it is that, but it's also a lot more. It launched at the beginning of the year, and it's an initiative sparked by women in Hollywood with a lot of different ways in which they want to try, I think, and take the Me Too moment and change it into actual lasting systemic change. So they'll be lobbying for legislation that they think could, you know, cut down on sexual harassment. They'll be urging changes in corporate practices when it comes to that. They'll be pushing for equal gender representation in leadership. But the piece that caught my eye the most is the creation of a brand new legal defense fund that will offer resources as well as attract attorneys and PR professionals to work pro bono or at reduced rates for those who want to come forward and take action about sexual harassment or sexual abuse that they've experienced.
Yeah, and Bryce, I think all of us have been aware that this is a really important moment. And it's really important that, you know, we kind of not only keep the momentum going, but go deeper. And it's going to be housed at the National Women's Law Center. And tell me, I know when Trump came into the, you know, in power, that actually I think already at the National Women's Law Center, they realized there were going to be a lot of challenges and a lot of efforts to even roll back, you know, some of the minimal things we have. And so they founded the Legal Network for Gender Equity, and that's kind of dovetailing into that, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. So this new Legal Defense Fund is going to basically be operated by the National Women's Law Center in tandem with their new Legal Network for Gender Equity. This network is the first of its kind, which is almost shocking, that focuses specifically on sex discrimination. And as you said, the National Women's Law Center decided to do this last year to start this new network because they saw that the federal government looks poised to, and in fact in many ways already is, turning away from its role in protecting victims of sex discrimination across the country. So they sort of stepped up with this network, and it's basically a hub. You know, they will reach out to and talk to private attorneys across the country who might be interested in representing people in these cases. And then they will also field calls from people who want to come forward with these cases, who have been discriminated against in some way and want to take legal action. And they'll sort of partner up the people who have complaints the law with those private attorneys who are interested in taking those cases. And the way the Legal Defense Fund plays in is it two ways, really. One is that it will help compensate some of these attorneys for their time. You know, sometimes private attorneys are willing to take a case without pay in the hopes that you win and they get some amount out of that settlement. But it can be a tough sell, particularly for women in low-wage jobs where the payment may not end up being that much in the end. So it will sort of entice them in that way. And then it will also help cover just the cost of bringing litigation, which really are quite high and can turn some people away from taking action in the first place. You have to pay for court filing fees. You have to pay for depositions. There's all sorts of things that go in. And so this fund, which already has $13 million raised, will also help defray those kinds of costs.
Yeah, and there are some pretty high-powered individuals involved. I'm pretty impressed that Tina Shen and also Roberta Kaplan, I think, are going to be in charge of the Legal Defense Fund with the Women's Law Center. And Tina Shen was former First Lady Michelle Obama's chief executive. And Roberta Kaplan, I think a lot of people are familiar with because she's the one that argued the Supreme Court case for Windsor and won with the LGBT compensation. And so we have people that are going back for quite a while that are really aware, because certainly during Barack Obama's administration, they were aware of discrimination against women and were trying so hard, changing policies in the schools, et cetera. And so I think that they were also aware that things needed to be done to actually protect some of these rights.
Yeah, I think the fact that you see such high-profile people involved in this is really heartening. Tina Shen, Roberta Kaplan, who are going to sort of be spearheading this. And then you look at the list of people who have been donating to the Legal Defense Fund itself, and it's just, you know, a list of Hollywood luminaries. It's Shonda Rhimes, Meryl Streep, Reese Witherspoon, J.J. Abrams, Jennifer Aniston, Steven Spielberg. I mean, you know, you name it. Which I think shows that there is appetite among high-profile celebrities, not just to do something about this, but to find ways to get involved that don't just help other people in Hollywood or other people in, you know, famous, high-profile positions. This Legal Defense Fund is meant to be a way to offer resources and assistance to women of all walks of life, particularly in low-wage jobs.
Yeah, and I think it's really impressive because I saw the January 1st actually a whole page in the New York Times in which the Hollywood, you know, Rhonda Grimes and Meryl Streep and others were pledging solidarity. And I thought it was really interesting that that was kind of in response to the National Workers Domestic Alliance actually writing to the Hollywood starlets and saying they supported them. They understood the kind of sexual harassment, you know, they faced in their workplace because they did too. And to me, that was a kind of a magic moment when, in a way, Meryl Streep and others were responding to that letter.
Yeah, I think you've seen some really incredible solidarity, and I think that really matters, not just for show. Like you said, there was a letter written by the Alianza Nacional de Campesinas, which is farm workers who have really successfully fought sexual harassment in their field of work. They wrote a letter to Hollywood actresses expressing solidarity last year. And then at the beginning of this year, you saw a letter from 300 women in the entertainment industry responding and saying thank you. And also calling out the many different women who are so vulnerable to harassment and abuse who do not get the same kind of spotlight. You know, they talked about janitors and home health aides and domestic workers and hotel cleaners. You know, they called them each out by name in their letter in response, which I think is really, it's a crucial way to say we stand with you and also we want to take our spotlight and shine it on you. And then the Legal Defense Fund really serves as a way to take that spotlight and then turn it into something concrete, real resources going to help women just like that come forward and take action.
You know, I've got part of this letter, and I just think it's so moving. So I'm just going to read just a little part of it. And it's, you know, they're saying, we see you, we thank you, we acknowledge the heavy weight of our common experience of being preyed upon, harassed, exploited by those who abuse their power and threaten our physical and economic security. We also recognize our privilege and the fact that we have access to enormous platforms to amplify our voices. To every woman employed in agriculture who has had to fend off unwanted sexual advances from her boss, every housekeeper who has tried to escape an assaultive guest, every janitor who's trapped nightly in a building with a predatory supervisor, every waitress grabbed by a customer and expected to take it with a smile, every garment and factory worker forced to trade sexual acts for more shifts, every domestic worker or home health aide forcefully touched by a client, every immigrant woman silenced by the threat of her undocumented status, being reported in retaliation for speaking up, and to women in every industry who are subjected to indignities and offensive behavior that they are expected to tolerate in order to make a living, we stand with you, we support you. The letter ends in solidarity. And I think that is really powerful.
It is. I mean, I was personally just sort of blown away reading that paragraph, that last paragraph you read, where they really seem to get it and to get how widespread it is, but also how people who are earning the lowest wages, who are not, you know, stars, who are not famous, are really the most vulnerable. And you saw that also at the Golden Globes. I was pretty impressed as well to see that people like Meryl Streep and others brought as their guests people who have been working for and fighting for these kinds of women basically their whole lives. Ijeom Pu, who has been organizing domestic workers, Saru Jaraiman, who has been organizing restaurant workers. They got to walk the red carpet. They got to speak to, you know, the fashion press and the people covering the red carpet itself. I saw them in the audience during the awards show. You know, these kinds of things are significant. I think, you know, if we want to take the Me Too movement and turn it into something bigger and more lasting, we need both policy changes and systemic changes, and we also need cultural changes. And things like this, these letters asking people to the Golden Globe, speaking out, that's going to be part of the cultural change.
Yeah, and getting the information out, because, you know, when you've got so many people who are really working very low-paid jobs, it's paycheck to paycheck to keep from homelessness, you know, and they've got all kinds of responsibilities, and so they just simply financially didn't dare really take action, or they realized if they did that they'd be so retaliated against. And as you pointed out, and one of the really big important things from the Legal Defense Fund is that there will be funds because I don't know if people realize just how expensive it actually is to do a lawsuit. And an attorney, even if you're going to get some property damages, this person's pretty lowly paid, and so it's not going to be a big payout. And I didn't realize there were so many ancillary costs, you know, like for a court reporter, it can be $1,500 a day, or videotape, or any experts you have. And so for most poor paid workers, this just simply, that this very important legal tool just simply wasn't available to you.
Yeah, there are so many hurdles, particularly for women who are in low-wage work, to actually taking action if something like this happens to them. I mean, like you said, first, there's just the issue of awareness. You may not understand your rights. You may not know where you're supposed to turn. What is the process? Where do you go? I think both the National Legal Network and the Legal Defense Fund can help spread awareness and make it clearer. You know, here's where you go. Here's what you do. These are your rights. And then even once you come forward, there are all of these financial costs, and they are steep, particularly if you're living paycheck to paycheck. So offering some financial assistance to both attract attorneys to your case and also make sure that you're not fronting thousands of dollars can really make a huge difference.
Yeah, and it makes a difference to all women. You know, the number of cases, and I think I read it actually where you wrote for the Institute for Women's Policy Research, where you were talking about sexual harassment at work, and for a woman that, for so many women, that actually they will go, they have very little opportunities many times to actually raise where they are, and so they will actually go to a different company to get a little higher job scale. And if they're sexually harassed at work, that can really compromise their chances. Number one, it might be so bad they just quit and they don't even have something else lined up. But even if they do, they know they're going to get all kinds of feedback, you know, that they're looked upon as making troubles, etc. And so we're not just talking lower wage women, but sexual harassment and equal and your equal opportunities at your workplace are huge.
Absolutely. I mean, sexual harassment is an economic issue. It's an economic barrier for women in all, you know, income scales, in all industries, in all jobs. Like you were saying, that research shows that women who are harassed are far more likely to change jobs. A lot of women, the vast majority of people who experience harassment do not take formal action because they fear, usually rightly, that they won't be believed or they'll even be retaliated against. And instead, they have to find ways to cope with it on their own, and that often means changing jobs or tuning out at work or doing things that really can have a strong negative impact on their own finances.
Yeah, and again, we're talking to Bryce Covert. And Bryce, don't you feel that this is really a very, very important moment that we either not only keep the momentum, but actually translate it into changes in legislation, et cetera? Because I think that we not only can we improve conditions for women, but I think for our whole society, I think this is really a transitional moment for this whole country.
I hope so. I mean, I think we're still in the middle of it. I think we don't know exactly where this is all going and what will actually be achieved and what will perhaps fall by the wayside. But it does feel like an extremely significant turning point for the country in the way we talk about and think about sexual harassment, the urgency it has, the importance people feel in addressing it. And so I really hope that all of those different aspects of this current moment are turned into real change and lasting change.
Well, Bryce Covert, you keep up your good research and your writing because it's all so important. So I really want to thank you for giving us this time today. And is there some area we didn't cover that you'd like to mention?
No, I think we covered it all.
Okay. Well, Bryce Covert, you keep up the good work and thank you so much for giving us this time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And again, that was Bryce Covert. She's very, very excellent researcher. And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater's Community Conscious Radio. And this is from a woman's point of view. And it's pretty powerful times, don't you think, Arlene?
Yes, indeed it is.
You know that particularly this is not just about women. All you men out there, what do you think? Have you been aware this is what your sisters, your wives, your mothers Or are you concerned this is what your daughters will be fighting? And so is this really the kind of society you want to live in? This is not just about women, and it's not just for women. So anyway, I am pretty excited, though, because I really think that we can make this a much better country. So, okay, well, we're going to go on to a different harassment, you might say, of Mother Nature. And so I'm going to put this music on, and we will come back with Michelle Allen, and she's going to be bringing us up to date, number one, on what's happening with this offshore oil drilling, but also what's the possibilities of fracking in this state. So let me put this music on, and we will come back with Michelle. Because I'm so happy we do have Michelle Allen with us on the phone. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
And Michelle is a Florida organizer at Food and Water Watch. She's based in St. Pete and works across the state to ban fracking. Also, she's been involved with anti-fracking and some of the problems with fossil fuels in this country and the state and water, et cetera. So, Michelle, what do you think about, quotes, the reprieve that Florida seemingly has gotten?
Well, first, I just want to say, Mary, happy to be here. Thanks for bringing me on. And, you know, we're happy that Florida has been removed from the Trump administration's offshore drilling plan. It seems pretty clear that this decision was set up to help Governor Scott earn some political points.
Well, you know, Michelle, I'm very impressed with Food and Water Watch. I really, the work you people do and have been doing throughout the years is really impressive. And I know that you're really backing Representative Hebert of Hawaii, who I think with her off act, off fossil fuels, is really, I think, really giving a really no-holds-barred approach to what we can do about, you know, some of the problems we're having. And wasn't Food and Water Watch, weren't you one of the first actually that came out, not necessarily for regulating fracking, but banning it?
Mm-hmm. We were. We were one of the first big national organizations to come out in support of banning fracking everywhere. And at the time, it wasn't necessarily a popular opinion. I think now we see in the news all the time about how detrimental fracking is. But at the time, it wasn't something that many organizations saw as possible to actually ban fracking, not just in specific states, but across the country. But we've known from the get-go that it's a dangerous and dirty practice, and it has no place in Florida or anywhere else in this country.
Yeah, and so often it was put as a bridge. In other words, it wasn't intended to be the permanent solution, but a bridge to get those to solar or wind or whatever. And so tell me, because I think it's important that people understand, really, the very diverse. In other words, it's not just one area, one region, but the way it actually involves the whole country, this whole process of fracking. So could you go in just a little more detail why you really don't feel that it can be safely regulated?
Certainly. Well, I mean, we have seen in places where fracking is occurring at really high rates, like in Pennsylvania, North Dakota, Michigan, Texas, people there are feeling the direct health and environmental impacts that fracking has had. From homeowners who, since fracking has been near or on their property, they've seen their drinking water go down and its quality, to the air pollutants that are put out by fracking operations. It's putting people's health at risk, and we've seen that in the science on it has been very well documented. And so We know that it needs to be banned in Florida and everywhere else in the country to protect people's health and protect the environment.
Yeah, and so many factors. In other words, just the whole process. And one of the factors, they need just the right sand. It's very important, you know, for the chemical water emulsion that they put down, you know, they fracture that down. That actually, I'm from Illinois, and some of really the richest, you know, farmland in the world, really, is in that whole Illinois, Iowa, that whole area. And it was shocking, absolutely stunning to me when I never realized that there is a sand layer in Illinois, and you know, it comes from the last ice age. It came down there, and that this is perfect sand for fracking, where, you know, Florida's beaches is not perfect sand at all, but this is but this is perfect sand. And so there they are taking thousands of some of the richest farmland in the world, and they are doing these incredibly destructive sand mining, which not only is going on 24/7, but is causing the silica dust in the air just terribly, and all the roads. And so it's this kind of extensive impact, you know, in states that you wouldn't even necessarily think about it, although Illinois has had its own problems with stopping fracking. That as Sandra Steingraber, when I had her on the show, because she's been fighting fracking from the get-go, she said, Mary, it's in everybody's backyard. She said, this isn't just a one-area problem. It's in everybody's backyard. And that really is the case, isn't it?
Certainly. You know, and when you look at the impacts from the, like you mentioned, the sand mining, and then looking at all the harsh carcinogenic chemicals that are utilized in the fracking process from beginning to end, it's a dirty and dangerous process.
And then also with the offshore oil drilling. And tell me, does it concern you that our Interior Department has taken a new policy? And, you know, they mention it, but I don't think a lot of people, it's really totally sunk in, that they want to not just be energy independent, but they want to actually be an exporter. They want to totally control the market. And so they really see, you know, all of the deposits of fossil fuels we have, either with fracking or whatever, throughout not only our national parks, et cetera, but throughout the country, as a very profitable enterprise that actually they can pay their own way and perhaps contribute to our deficit. Do you think a lot of people are aware that this is now the policy?
I think a lot of people these days are starting to bury their heads in the sand because what they're seeing in the news is just so stressful. And that's scary, right? We want people need to know what this administration is doing to greatly ramp up offshore drilling around the country, and fracking and drilling inland, like you mentioned, including in national parks and national lands. I mean, that's even happening in Florida and has been happening in Florida for decades. Big Cypress National Preserve has had oil drilling in the preserve for decades, and currently an oil company is searching for more oil in vast swaths of land in Big Cypress National Preserve, which is home to endangered species like the Florida panther. So, you know, so this is even happening in our backyard here in Florida, down in Southwest Florida. And you know, really the only way to ensure that those drilling sites never become fracking sites is to pass a statewide ban on fracking.
Well, now I know there, in fact, I think it's tonight, isn't it, in Orange Park, Florida, that you're going to put like a Batman light up on the city hall, because you really want to call attention, because with the legislature opening, that you're making attempts to ban fracking in Florida, but last year it didn't even get out of Bradley's committee, wasn't that right?
Exactly. So, yep, so the legislative session kicked off on Tuesday, and for the second year in a row, we have bipartisan-backed legislation introduced by Senator Dana Young and Representative Kathleen Peters to ban fracking statewide. And so you're exactly right. This evening, our allies, Rethink Energy Florida and the Floridians Against Fracking, are hosting a rally in Orange Park, which is right in Senator Rob Bradley's district. We are going to be shining a light. We're calling the Bradley signal, right? It looks like the Batman signal. We're going to be shining this light to call on Senator Bradley to bring the bill for a vote in his committee. I mean, we know he's with us. Last year when the bill was heard in another committee, Senator Bradley voted in support of the bill. So we know he supports banning fracking. Now we just need to ensure that he's going to prioritize the bills in the legislative session and bring the bill for a vote in his committee. And we need Senator Bradley to pass this bill, and so that's why we're hosting that event this evening.
Now, Michelle, what do you think the number of legislatures? Do you think, or this is maybe fair to ask you this, but do you think the majority would like to see fracking banned here in Florida? Or where are they coming down on it?
The people attending the event this evening?
The Florida legislature.
You know, I mean, one thing that's a really great indication is just how many co-sponsors we have on the banned fracking bills. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, it is strong bipartisan support. In Florida, our legislators, regardless of whether you're a Democrat, Independent, Republican, they're supporting the banned fracking bills. This bill is across party lines, and we have 90 resolutions supporting a ban on fracking and ordinances actually banning fracking that have been passed across the state. So clearly, local elected officials and local residents across the state have made it very clear what they want, and it seems like our legislators are waking up to that.
Well, I think it's so important that you know, organizations like yours and others really get out how dangerous. I mean, here in Florida with our fragile aquifer, you know, it's already being challenged mightily by saltwater intrusion, et cetera. And you think of the process of hydraulic fracturing or fracking, you know, with the explosions, et cetera. And you think of the states where it is, Ohio, Oklahoma, places like this, the earthquakes they're having. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't imagine with Florida's really fragile limestone aquifer, really, we just don't have the structure at all that can tolerate that.
Exactly. And majority of Floridians rely on our underground aquifers, our water supply, for our drinking water.
Uh-huh.
And fracking would put that at risk, and we simply just cannot put at risk the drinking water for millions of Floridians.
Now,
not acceptable.
And I know another area, because they come at this from so many different angles, because, as you mentioned before, and I believe it's still proprietary information that they won't totally tell you what chemicals they are injecting down, but we know, you know, just from the refuse, from the waste, that there's benzene, there's tetrachlorine, there's formaldehydes, et cetera, that they were trying here in Florida to change levels, particularly of benzene and some other really very dangerous carcinogenic agents, but would be involved with fracking. And so where does that stand?
So I believe that last year that did pass and went through. And so really the next step to ensure that fracking companies cannot come in and utilize those dangerous chemicals and carcinogens like benzene is to pass the bills to ban fracking in this 2018 legislative session.
Well, I think that's why it really underscores why you and your organization chose to ban fracking, because when you see that kind of complicity where, you know, it's well known what a carcinogenic agent benzene is, and if it's in your drinking water where you're exposed to even very small amounts every single day, I mean, that is just needlessly challenging cancer.
Exactly. And we can't be putting Floridians' lives at risk just to benefit and line the pockets of a few.
And back to the offshore oil drilling. Number one, are you impressed with, so to speak, the legitimacy of, quote, the handshake or an agreement between Trump and Zinke and Scott? Do you think that could be subject to change if the political winds slightly change? I mean, in other words, how much of really of a, so to speak, bona fide guarantee reassurance even is this for Florida?
That's a great question, and I think we're going to find out here in the coming weeks and the coming months, but certainly we do not consider it a done deal at all that Florida is off the table, and we are going to continue watching and pressing and working with our allies to make sure that Florida stays off of the offshore drilling proposal. But even more so, right, we don't want drilling off of Florida's coast, but we don't want drilling off of any of our coasts. pollution does not honor political boundaries. If there's a spill off of a neighboring state's coast, that spill very well could drift down to Florida's coast and impact us as well. So, you know, really, if the Trump administration is sincere about honoring the requests of local communities that would be directly impacted by the offshore drilling plan, then they would drop it altogether and quit drilling off of our coast.
And Michelle, you know, there we're following the horrible progression of events in California with their wildfires and then totally denuding the trees, and to the point now that they've had enough really serious burns that in the areas they aren't recovering. The trees aren't regrowing, or the few saplings that do, they can't tolerate the new heat. And so now they've got the mudslides. And we're looking back, and we so lucked out here in Florida with Irma, but, you know, Puerto Rico did not, and we cannot depend on this kind of luck. And, you know, I think science has pretty much established a connection between climate change and the severity of these kind of storms. I mean, the time has been well past, actually, to make the conversions from the fossil fuels into renewable. And so that, and here we are, the sunshine state, for Pete's sake. I mean, this has to be our emphasis.
I completely agree. And you mentioned earlier the OFF Act by Representative Gabbard that we've been working on. We have to move off of fossil fuels and transfer to 100% clean renewable energy as soon as possible. And the OFF Act would move us to 100% clean energy by 2035. And we really see 2035 as like that we cannot wait any longer past that year.
Yeah.
It's already been past the time, really.
Yeah, and I think 80% by like 2025 or something like that. I mean, she's not kidding around. And I was also impressed with the number of co-sponsors that an awful lot of people are really trying to push this through.
Mm-hmm. We're really, really working on really all levels. We're working on the local level, the state levels, and at the national level to ensure that our elected officials are hearing from their constituents and learning how important these issues are to constituents and their voters to really get action to slow climate change and get us on a path to 100% clean renewable energy.
And Michelle, are you also troubled, you know, because after our terrible Horizon, you know, that if any people should be aware of the dangers of offshore oil drilling, it should be here in the Gulf. And then there were a few safety measures passed in, I didn't think nearly enough, but now Trump has rescinded those. And so does that concern you also, that they can just, so to speak, self-report? They don't have to bring in anybody to inspect that what few measures they had have just been blown to the wind.
Of course, it's very concerning, and it is, again, just a reminder that the Trump administration is looking out to line the pockets of oil companies instead of looking out for the health and well-being of not only the workers on oil rigs, but the surrounding communities who have to deal with the aftermath once a major explosion or spill occurs.
Okay, Michelle, Matt Allen, what can people do?
Well, I mean, really, the number one thing that you can do right now is call both your state senator and your state representative, urge them to support the ban fracking bills, Senate Bill 462 and House Bill 237.
Okay, Michelle Allen. Well, do keep me informed, because nothing's more important to our overall health than potable good water and Florida's most precious resource, and we've got to fight to protect it. So were there any areas that you particularly want to mention that we didn't?
Well, I did want to mention, because you mentioned Dr. Sandra Steingraber earlier in the show. We are working with Dr. Steingraber, and she's going to be joining us in Miami on January 20th, so just a couple weeks from now, and she's going to be presenting new science on fracking. And so really excited to have her coming to Florida to join us and learn a bit more about what we're doing here in the state to ban fracking.
Oh, yeah, because she is so knowledgeable. So that is going to be so valuable. So I'll have you come back and really report on that. So okay, well, that is wonderful news. So Michelle Allen, Food and Water Watch, Florida, and she's based in St. Pete. Thank you so much for all the good work you're doing and all the time you've given us this morning. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mary.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. And we've got our work to do, Arlene, to pick the water, et cetera.
We certainly do. And we also have an event coming up on January 30th, Wrap Up Human Trafficking Awareness Month with Bridging Freedom on January 30th. The event is called For Her, A Glimpse into a Future of Hope. Join them for exciting campus updates and giving her a restored future. Sponsored by the Hillsborough County Bar Association on Tuesday, January 30th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. That will be at Cohen Hall, 1610 North Tampa Street in Tampa. For more information, you can go to bridgingfreedom.org or you can call 813-317-6332.
And you have been listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. Thanks so much for listening. Just keep it here the whole time, people.
The world we know is built on skill.